Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us for the weekly Worcester Nazarene podcast, a conversation with our pastors and leaders to help us along our journey of loving God, loving people, and living transformed.
Well, welcome back to the Worcester Naz podcast. Thanks for joining us. Today we have Pastor Nate. He kicked us off with a great first message of our 21 Jumpstart series, Family Strong. So we're going to chat a little bit about what he was speaking on and how we can dive deeper this week. So you were talking a lot about how we are part of the family of God.
Yeah.
Where did that kind of come from as you were planning this message, starting off this conversation about family?
Well, I think all too often, whenever people relate to being a part of the family of God, being in the family of God, they automatically draw lines on what their past has been or what their family history has been. And it usually starts with, well, my family was dysfunctional, so I don't really, or I can't really. And so for me, it's this idea of like, we've got to get past our own history and in some way get over ourselves. Like, you know, yes, we have our past. We have the things that have come with us. But the fact of the matter is, it's Christ that defines us.
Right.
If we have come to him, if we have said yes to him, we're basically also giving up the ability to define ourselves, saying, okay, what do you see in me? Who do you see me as being? What am I shooting for based on what you want? Not based on my history, not based on my past, not based on what I'm carrying,
bringing
to the foot of the cross. We're supposed to leave it there and let him establish us going forward.
Yeah.
And so I think that idea of we need to actually define terms before we can start this. So for me, that was where that idea came from, is we've got to start at the very foundation of where we come from as believers.
Right. Right. You talked a lot about that in terms of like adoption and
yeah.
how God has adopted us, and specifically in the context of what adoption meant. You talked a lot about Ben-Hur
yes.
and all of that. In the movie, I haven't seen it. So
what
is
movie.
Your favorite scene? I was thinking about watching it actually, but
yeah. I have different favorite scenes from different movements in that movie, because it's very different. But one of the things that's interesting is the author of the book, whose name I cannot recall at the moment, when he wrote Ben-Hur, was initially, he was an atheist and was going to disprove, basically going to make it a mockery of Christianity. That was his goal. But in doing the research they did, it actually ended up coming to faith.
Okay.
And so it is a fictional tale, but it is a very Christ-centered tale. Judah Ben-Hur has several interactions with Jesus throughout the different stages of his life. The very first one he has is after he's been sold, and they're taking him through taking him to sell him as a galley slave. He is being particularly mistreated by a guard, because this guard knows that he used to be wealthy, and it's like, now he's down here in the dirt, so I'm gonna, you know, give him a little extra. And he's not giving him water, and they're literally walking through the desert. He's trying to make it as miserable and possibly kill him if he can. So they get to this one spot as he's taking him to the sea, and basically he's like, you know, no water for you. Everybody else can drink, but you're going to sit there. And he just collapses. It's like that moment where you realize he's just going to break. He's going to give in, and he's just going to give up. And in the movie Ben-Hur, you never see Jesus' face. It's always,
okay,
you know, up from behind him shot. And Jesus comes up and gets a cup of water and brings it to Judah. And this guard specifically comes after him, like, you know, no, I said no water for him, and, you know, goes to get in his face. And he just stands up and turns and looks at him. And like, you literally see the shame on this man's face. Mm. Like, he just kind of shrinks and just walks away and lets him give him that cup of water.
Yeah.
And later on that ties in, Judah comes back, and when he sees him carrying his cross later, he's like, I know this man. Like, why do I know this man from somewhere? And so I love that scene, because Jesus is being defiant without being unkind. You know,
right.
It's just this idea of, you weren't going to argue with that. Even this guy who had authority, who had a whip in his hand, who could have done something about
it,
coming face to face with Jesus was like, okay, no. Like, no, and it revealed something in him clearly in that moment. And obviously, I mean, it's a movie from like the late 50s, early 60s. So it's a little overacted, but it's great. It's a great movie, but that's probably particularly one of my favorite scenes is that first interaction. That's the first time we see Jesus in the narrative. So
I do
love that.
Just portraying him so clearly as like the kind Jesus.
Yeah. And yet you don't see him.
Right.
Like, how much they convey without actually seeing his face at any point is really incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, just giving water to thirsty people. Yeah. That's just good stuff. So, well, that's awesome. There was this whole thing you were talking about specifically on Sunday about how, sometimes when we talk about family, we start getting bogged down in like, we're immediately thinking of like parents, mm-hmm. siblings, children. And then you went to this, this heavenly family that we're a part of.
Yeah.
And specifically this adoption is two ways. Like mm-hmm. you don't get to just like live into,
right.
like you don't just get to live in this, but then still keep this as
right.
aside. I want you to talk a little bit more about that. Cause that was good.
Yeah. Well, and Paul talks about that so much throughout scripture, that idea of, you know, the transformation from one thing to another. Obviously that was very dear to him because of, you know, and obviously we misunderstand the name Paul to Saul kind of thing. Like that's not what we typically talk about as, but I won't get into that. That's neither here nor there. But he really understood that concept of what I once was is no longer what I am now.
Right.
What defined me, what I strove for, what I tried for before is not what I am now. And I think that, again, coming back to that idea of our past defining us so much, I think that family is interesting because you don't get to reject the idea of God as Father just because you had a bad experience. Mm-hmm. And you don't get to do that with anything. I mean, one of the things that I love to say is that there are certain things in the Bible, there are certain aspects of following Jesus that we don't get to have an opinion about.
Right.
There's plenty of stuff where, you know, scripture's not really all that clear, or it doesn't really care to make a point, and we can have family table discussions as believers as to how it is to believe a particular thing. But there's certain things like we don't get to walk away from,
yeah.
and God as Father is one of those things.
Right.
And so just because we've had a bad experience, just because we don't trust our earthly father, or we had an absent father, or we had an abusive father, whatever it may be, we don't get to just say, well, I reject the idea of God as Father because my experience was bad.
Sure.
We have to come to it in a fresh perspective of saying, I know, acknowledging the reality, like I know my experience was terrible.
Right.
Was not what it should have been, was not God honoring even. That was something that broke God's heart, not just, you know, tried to break me in life.
Right.
But I am now going to come to the source, the definition of Father, and start from there instead of saying, my bad experience gives me the definition and I know what I need to know. I've got it figured out.
Yeah.
No, there's gotta be a humility. Which is a hard thing to say, again, especially for somebody who's experienced abuse, who's experienced neglect. But look at them and say, you have to have the humility to come to God as Father and be like, I don't know what it means.
Right.
Show me what it means.
Right.
You demonstrate to me what it means.
Right.
And that's scary. It's a vulnerability. It's a return to pain and a pushing through pain that nobody ever wants to do.
No.
But there's something so healing, and I've seen it over and over and over again, in people realizing that the desire that they had within them of what they wanted their earthly father to be, that's who God is.
Yeah.
And I remember my dad telling me that he had a teenager in his youth group one time who just, I mean, was in that weird thing of hated his father, but just wanted his father's attention, you know, right. that constant tension. And he asked them, he said, well, I want you to just tell me, you just list for me what a good father does. Because they were struggling with this. I can't relate to God as Father. And they went through and said all the things about the time that he would spend, the attention that he would give, all these things. And my dad just started writing things down, and then eventually just looked at him and said, this literally defines God right. as Father. You've just done that.
Right.
And that softened that person to that idea. And I think we do. I think we struggle with that. And even those of us who have been believers for a long time, the idea that we get to a place where we think we have to earn or toe the line or do whatever it is in order to maintain God's affections. And this is where that idea of loyalty comes in. Like, yes, there are certain things as believers that are now expected of us. If we're claiming his name, we got to walk. Again, there are some things we don't get to have an opinion on. We got to walk and we got to do the things, but it's not to get approval. It's from the place that he has already, you know, metaphorically put his hand on our head and said, this is my child. We're already there. It's not a matter of earning or maintaining or doing any of those things. It's like, no, I am a child. And because I'm a child, I will now do these things.
Yeah.
As opposed to, I want to keep my favor. So I'm going to strive and I'm going to try. And so again, for me, it's, I feel like Paul culturally was being very clear about what he was talking about. But because now we have this idea of adoption as an innocent, small thing that has no history,
Right.
And we're going to give it a future, which again, I mentioned is a beautiful picture and is relevant as well. But specifically what Paul is talking about is no, you had a past, you had a family, you had your debt, you had your shame. And this person came in and said, all that's gone now. Now you're with us.
Yeah.
And it changed the way that society related to you, but it also changed the responsibility that you had in life. It just changed everything.
Yeah.
And again, I want to make sure that we're getting what Paul was actually trying to say, not just what we in a 21st century mentality think of something as.
Right.
Again, beautiful picture nonetheless, but not what he was getting at.
Right. Right. It's almost more along the lines of our modern understanding of like adopting an unruly teenager.
Yeah.
Than like adopting like an innocent little baby.
Exactly.
Which is like, it's still a modernized idea of that.
For sure.
But a little bit different. And I mean, what you were talking about, you said something on Sunday, you said, we're already in the family, but we live on the edge of almost getting kicked out all the time. Mm-hmm. Just this like constant feeling like, man, like the other shoe's going to drop,
yep.
like something's going to happen and they're going to realize who I am. And then as soon as they do, like I'm done, or I have to like keep up this charade, keep up the facade, because I don't want to get removed.
And you know, that was one of the things that I think everybody, especially if they become a believer at a younger age, because it does just tie in with generally figuring out who you are. Sure. But I think that for the most part, people do struggle with this idea of, I look around me and I see people who are doing it right. And my inclination is I need to try harder and I need to do better. And so, I mean, for me, even though I grew up in a Wesleyan holiness, Nazarene world, the idea of completely saying yes to Jesus, the idea of entire sanctification, of giving my all, you know, whatever you want to call it, I saw it modeled for me, and never ever did anybody ever tell me, you have to do, you have to be, you have to. But I looked at these people around me who just walked faithfully and I thought, I'm not doing something right.
Right.
I have to try harder because they can do it. Why can't I do it? And it wasn't until I had like an 11-year gap between my salvation experience and realizing, oh, no, I need to give up. Hmm. Like my job in this is to say, no, I surrender. I give you everything. And whatever you want is a yes. Not I'm going to try harder.
Yeah.
It's just going to be yes. Maybe a slower yes than a faster yes sometimes, but it will be a yes in the end.
Yeah.
And so for me, that idea of just constantly failing, constantly living in guilt, constantly living in this state of, well, I just didn't try hard enough. If I was really, really a believer, solidly a Christian, I wouldn't have even wanted these things or done these things.
Right.
But no, it's giving up. It's not trying harder. And so that idea of, you know, we're not on the edge. Mm-hmm. He's done it. He did it.
Yeah.
We don't do it. He did it. He does it. He continues to do it. Our job is to say, yes, I acknowledge that and I'm with you and I'm going where you want me to go.
Yeah. Yeah. Towards the end of your message, when you were talking specifically about Dylan's story, like that was moving in a different way, because it took something that's hard for us to understand because we don't even have like language for, like we don't have feet to, because we can understand it in our head and our heart, but like our mouth can't even fully
sometimes
communicate.
Yeah, I hear that.
You know what adoption even looks like. But Caleb like being like, look, I see you as my son and I'm going to chase after that.
Yeah.
Until you do that. As you are there, as brother and uncle and all those things, what was that perspective like
for you?
Like, was God working in your heart through that story then, or just, I want to flesh that out.
Well, I remember my very first moment with Dylan. There, it's an odd thing because we were around well before him and Kayla, or him and Melissa started dating. And Caleb was in the waiting room when Dylan was born. Mm-hmm. As was my sister, and I was in and out. I was doing other things because, you know, I don't even know why. But my mom filmed Dylan's birth. She was there in the room when he was born. Again, at the time, having no clue that this is where we were going to end up.
Right.
But I'll never forget, it was in the old church building on the, what probably would have been the north wing. We kind of had a middle section and then these two sideways wings. And I was over here and I came over and Melissa had Dill and he was just little, swaddled up, tiny. I mean, just tiny. I don't know how old he was, but it was his first Sunday there. And I remember I took him and I just sat on that front row and I just held him. And I just remembered, part of it was because Melissa was really close to my age. So there was just this thing that, you know, as a teenager just connected with me. Sure. And I remember just sitting there and just praying for him and praying about his life and praying where he was going to go and where he was going to end up. And then didn't think anything else of it. It was like this just weird moment, which sure. Again, little did I know what that would come to mean. But I remember when quite a bit later, you know, when Kay and Melissa started dating, and Dylan was 5 when they got married. So he was probably 3-ish when they started dating.
Okay.
And being that he's my younger brother and he was young, I mean, he was barely 21 when they got married.
Hmm.
And I remember having a conversation with him, and we even had a conversation with him as a family, not because we didn't love Melissa or Dylan, but like, is this really what you want to do?
Yeah.
Because this is not just getting married and the responsibility that comes with that. This is, you will instantly be a father. You will. And he did, he sat in a room with all 5 of us together, the 4 of us expressing, have you really thought about this? Here are our concerns. Again, not disparaging Dylan and Melissa at all.
Sure.
And he just looked at us like, no, this is what I want. Like, I want this. Like it was, yeah. And Caleb is a man of few words, always has been. But when he speaks them, you listen. Mm-hmm. And, you don't really have a whole lot of room to push back when he's willing to speak something. And so for us, that was the moment where we're like, okay, like if you're in, we're in. And just watching how he pursued Dylan and watching how he didn't pursue Dylan because of Melissa, because that's always the thing you think about. It's like, oh, well, sure. I want to get in good with mom, so I guess I'll treat the kid okay. I don't know that I've ever seen it done like he did. There was just a purity to it. There was he was his father. I mean, that was just it. And he wanted that. And so long before the adoption actually went through and all those things, you know, they had several years where they were married before that all came through. But he just did. He pursued him. He never took a moment where, even in the hardest moments, and Dylan had some hard moments growing up, you know, especially through high school and, you know, just dealing with his own identity and, you know, sure. running from Jesus too and all the things. But Caleb was just his dad and was going to be. That never was a question. That was never something that was ever going to be weaponized. Never was Dylan's past or his origin going to be thrown in his face. And we all felt that way. Like,
yeah.
But Caleb led the way in that. I mean, he really did. And not to say that my parents or that we wouldn't have accepted Dylan anyway, but he didn't give us an option. You know, this was his son and that was it. And it's been that way ever since. And, I look at it and I'm like, this kid made me an uncle. Like if it weren't for him, that was the thing that started it all for me, you know?
Yeah.
And so there was just, for me, there's that beauty of, and I really drilled down on that idea of that God has pursued us. We often think of salvation in the greater narrative and the, you know, the plan to save the world. But I'll never forget there's an old Christmas, old Point of Grace Christmas album. And there's a song, called Light of the World and singing about Jesus. And there's a line in it that says, saving the world for me. Hmm. And I love that concept because it personalizes it. It's not just, oh, well, God so loved the world. It's like, no.
Sure.
He saved the world so that he could save me.
Right.
And he's pursued me specifically. And I think we lose that. We lose that, not the personalness of it, but we lose the intensity of what it actually means for the God of the universe who needed nothing from us,
right.
Who needs nothing from us now, looking at us and saying, I want this child as my own.
Yeah.
And again, that was just such a perfect example of God's heart in that. And, you know, I've seen that for my brother throughout my life. He is just that man. But it just crystallized to me in a whole different way, watching him do that and watching him be that person in that yeah. moment. So that's what God has done for us. And I just happen to get to see a real world example done very well in front of me and still get to see it, you know, in front of me every single day.
Yeah.
So.
And I'm sure there are others who would have stories that are similar.
Yeah, like, no doubt.
but ones that are often hidden, and that's mm-hmm. that's kind of sweet in a different way.
Yeah.
As we look specifically into, you know, God saved the world for me, as you were just saying. I often think about how sometimes like chairs are pulled up to a guest table to make more room for guests.
Yeah.
And then there are times when like this chair is now a permanent fixture around this dinner table because they will be here forever.
Yeah.
And so we kind of have this opportunity to live in the family of God. And so as we're walking with people in this earth, giving guidance. I mean, as pastors, what does that even entail for us?
I think one of the struggles with the church in general is that we can have a sense of like a tiered system mm-hmm. of being a part of the family, of being a part of the church. Now, granted, there are realities of safety and making sure, you know, everybody's on the same page. We kind of know where we're going together. There's the reality of integration into a family where you don't necessarily know the rules. You don't understand how things work and you got to figure that out. But I think unfortunately, a lot of times in the church, we tie identity as a child of God to, are you doing these things right? And are you able to serve in a certain capacity? Are you able to function in a certain capacity? Are you useful to the church yet?
Right.
You know? And I don't think that's every situation, but I think that's quite often we hold people at a distance in the name of, well, they're not ready yet, or, well, we don't want this or we don't want that. Where in all reality, the acceptance has to be immediate.
Yeah.
Full rights, full access, full membership in the family has to be immediate. And anything that does not come around immediately, there has to be clarity. And there has to be led towards, how do we get you, whether it's involvement, whether it's leadership, whether it's whatever it's going to be.
Right.
Here's how we do this as our family, as being a part, because you're already in.
Right.
Here's what we're going to do. You're going to do the same thing I did. You're going to do the same thing, you know, so-and-so did. This is how we do it, because this is what it means to be a part of the family. So I think as a pastor, you can't ever tie membership in the church, involvement in the church, involvement in leadership, involvement in service to the identity as a child of God.
Yeah.
And it's too easy to do that.
Yeah.
And to reject people based on that. And no, we don't get to have an opinion. If they've come to Jesus and they're walking with Jesus, agreement or not, whether we align on every theological aspect or not, we don't get the opportunity to say, no, you're not. You're not a believer because of this, that, or the other. It's like, no, they are. And we got to deal with the messiness of, here's what I think and here's what's happening. What do we do with this?
Sure.
And again, part of the role as pastor is to help pastor through that and right. help people learn and help people grow and honestly learn yourself and grow yourself as you're right. walking through that. But again, the identity as a child of God, as a member of the family, it doesn't matter in that case. It just is.
Yeah.
It just is. And we as leaders have to be willing to admit that and have the humility to go, I don't always get everything right. Yes, there are some things that experience has taught me that I can help in, but this person is a child of God and I have to relate to them as somebody that's in the family. That's the start, full stop. That's where we are.
Yeah. as we get to be in this family, it's really cool. It got me thinking the last couple of days just about like how you don't give up on your kids when they when they hit the stage that you don't like. And you don't start not liking your sibling because they're like in that awkward stage
right.
where they like maybe their head is too big for their body or like something yes. something weird, like you're like, okay, you're not perfect, so I just don't like you anymore.
Right.
Sometimes we have the tendency to do that in the church because you're like, you're not ideal anymore, but that's not how the family of God works.
Right.
And so letting the definition of God as our father define our father and God's definition of family define our family and all of those things. And like, if it's not this, then okay, well, then our earthly situation is broken. It's not that
right.
this needs to be defined by our earthly situation and understanding. So as we walk into the rest of 21 Jumpstart, the rest of this Family Strong conversation, I'm excited to start looking at family through this lens.
Yeah.
Because it You are right. You said it on Sunday, and it continues to be true. Like, this is where it all starts. This is where God starts, and it's where we need to start too.
Yeah.
Before we wrap up, we just have a couple minutes. Is there any like last things that you want to say as like, I really hope that walking away from this message, they get this.
Yeah. That it's already done. That's probably my biggest one. You're already loved. You're already chosen. You've already been given this name. And that's just it. That's it. There are no caveats. There are no additional things. There's no fine print. It's done. And the minute that we can come to an understanding of that, because it's not just what we feel. It's also got to be like, we get it. Like, it's got to click.
Right.
And the minute we get that, it completely changes the way we relate to God, the way we relate to each other, the way that we relate to the world around us, because we're not trying to earn. It's not from a place of insecurity anymore.
Right.
Our security is in Him, because we can't do any of these things. It's because of Him. It's due to Him. It is what He sustains, what He maintains, and He's chosen us. Mm-hmm. And it's done. And so for me, I just, you know, I didn't do it first service, but at the end of second service, I kind of gave this little bit of benediction of child of God, be this, child of God, be this. Not because you need to strive, but because this is who you are.
Yeah.
This is your identity. Child of God is your identity. Not if you want to be a child of God, do this. No. Child of God, go and be. And so that would be my ultimate thing. It's already done. It's already accomplished. And nothing that you bring to the table is going to make it better. You are just meant to live in that grace, to just say yes and act like a part of the family. Mm-hmm. Act like you know you have a seat at the table, because you do.
Yeah.
So that would be my last drill down, I guess.
Okay.
For sure.
Okay. Well, thanks for joining me.
Yes.
Being on the podcast. And we'll see y'all Sunday.
Yes.